yourself, but that's okay. It's up to you. I'll do whatever you ask me to do.
Okay. It's this is Deborah Gordon, Roseanne Ariel, the National Council of Jewish Women. It is May 22nd, and we are interviewing Ezra Levine for the Oral History Project for the Pittsburgh section. Could you please state your name?
Yeah, my name is Ezra Levine, and my age is 91, and I'm in the Riverview Apartments, still able to do almost everything
that
a person has to do.
Thank you. You don't act like one either.
I do. I sound dead. To me, it sounds like an old man. I don't feel like an old man. Okay.
One of the questions that came to mind is you've discussed your brother, Isaac Don Levine, and could you tell us about his work, his life, interesting bits of information that would be of interest to people?
Well, my brother was one of six brothers. He was the oldest one of the six brothers that my mother had, six sons. First, my mother had a daughter, and then six sons, and then another daughter. And I always compared it to a corned beef sandwich. The two girls on the top and bottom with the bread, and the brothers for the corned beef.
I love that. That's great. She was smart.
And Isaac, his Hebrew name was Yitzchok, and in Yiddish they called him Itzel. He was the oldest one of the six brothers. I am the fifth one, so he's a little bit distant. He was a little bit distant from me. But as a child, I remember him first having a book of compositions in Hebrew at age 13.
He wrote a book?
It wasn't a published book, it was a book of his own in handwriting, but it was just the same, it was a book of, for a boy 13, it was considered very unusual. I remember him next as a student, walking from one end of the room to the other, taking in, there was a high school, and the high schools in Russia were almost like colleges in the United States. They were very much advanced, and I remember him as a student very restlessly taking in all his homework. I remember him later as leaving home and going in some other community to be a Hebrew teacher in a modern Hebrew school instead of the old time cheders that they had for rabbis in the rabbi's home. I cannot think of the name of the town. And I remember him later. It's in 1911 already, and I was only 12 years old, going to the United States because the younger brother next to him was already in the United States. The younger brother left a year before.
What was his name?
Sam left at the age of 16 for the United States. Also because of the draft of Jewish soldiers into the Tsar's army. And those that didn't go to the United States used to injure themselves. They'd cut off a finger so that they would be rejected. They'd be 4Fs. But others just left the country because to be in the Tsar's army almost meant like being a Christian. You had to eat whatever they give you, and the Jewish soldiers were not treated equal with the others. So they left Sam was the first one, Isaac was the second one. When he came to the United States, they landed in Boston, Sam and Isaac. And Isaac began, he learned English, of course. He went to the high school in the United States for a short period of time. And as I recall it, he was offered a job in Kansas City, Missouri, as a Hebrew teacher, I think, as a Hebrew teacher, as far as I can recall. And while he was there, he began writing. And as a matter of fact, I have his original writing in a book here by Birmingham, is that it? I have the book here. And they quote Isaac 4 or 5 pages about his first days in the United States.
So it's in the book, and the book is called?
The book is...
Well, we can get that later.
Yeah. It's by a man named Birmingham. He's not Jewish himself, but he writes... He wrote
Stephen
a lot of,
Birmingham.
Yeah.
Stephen Birmingham.
Could be.
Okay.
Anyhow, then he... That was printed locally in the Kansas City Star,
mm-hmm.
feature articles, his experiences as a new immigrant coming from Russia,
mm-hmm.
in the Kansas City Star. Then he gave up his Hebrew job and became a writer for a feature company that, what they call it, I just had a word in my mouth. They send out stuff to all the papers.
Syndicated.
He became a syndicated writer, and I think the Toronto Star, it was called, was the first paper that printed his feature articles.
And what were these articles What were these articles about, the immigrants in Russia?
Yeah, about Russia and the difference and what life is like here compared to life.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, in Russia, and all that. And in 1917, he was only 6 years in the United States. He became a foreign correspondent for the Hearst newspapers, and they sent him to Russia right after the Communist Revolution. And Kerensky was still there. He was the first foreign correspondent. Up to that time, the American papers didn't write anything about foreign stuff. It was all local.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the revolution in Russia or something, I don't know, or the war, interest in European affairs grew, and so he was the first foreign correspondent.
So he came back to Russia in 1917.
He went back to Russia.
Were you still there? You were still there?
I don't know. I came in 1930.
Was it difficult?
You're sticking to one man now.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump around.
No, I just want to...
And it's taken up a lot of time, but you ask for it, I'm going to give it to you.
Okay.
From memory. And so he was the first man to go there, and he sent cables over to here. And his name was on all the front pages all over the United States. On Sundays, the Hearst papers used to have a section called March of Events.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at that time, Mussolini, I don't know, Lloyd George, 1917, the war was still on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right, the war was still on. The revolution in Russia. They gave him in. The war was still. And then, so he became very famous at that time. And he came back and he lectured. He lectured here in the high school in Pittsburgh. What's the name of that high school on Center Avenue near?
Fifth Avenue.
That's my 30s. Just came back from San Francisco. And
Okay, so you were saying that...
Am I talking about Isaac?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, he became very famous, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And he became an anti-communist. His very first book that he wrote was to prove that Russia, that communism cannot stay forever. That Russia isn't developed for it and it's going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad that he isn't alive today to see it. And he got abused for it very much. He was heckled here in the high school and he was called and he sold himself to Hearst. Hearst was not a very popular man in the United States. The Hearst papers, yellow journalism, they called
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a lot of abuse, but he kept on writing books, The Mind of an Assassin, that's about a man who killed Trotsky in Canada, I believe. He wrote a book about Billy Mitchell. Billy Mitchell wanted in that war, in the First World War, to use airplanes to win the war. And the military were against him. They didn't believe airplanes could do it. Here's a draft conflict, First World War.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote about 15 or 20 books. I don't know. They made movies out of two or three of them. And he bought himself a big estate near Washington, D.C. And he became very wealthy from the syndicated and writing name. And he always helped the family. Never forgot the family. Mother, father, he always sent money. And he was very nice to us.
Was he married? Did he have children?
Yes, he was married in Kansas City. Mary Leavitt, she was an opera star singer, I don't know, I don't think you met.
Mm-hmm.
She was a singer. And I remember Mary very well, and her mother from Kansas City, but somehow or other, two strong characters can't exist. One has to be weaker than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very powerful character. And he couldn't. And he wanted to be the boss. You know, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let a woman wearing pants and a man wearing a skirt. It can't happen. Anyhow, they got divorced, and he married a secretary, a Jewish girl from Punxsutawney, Maryland. And her name is Ruth. Well, a maiden name I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And she lives in Washington, D.C. And the rest of the life was on the estate, and he finally got a stroke.
Did he write his books most of the time, or was he also working as a for the newspapers?
No, he was independent.
He was independent.
An independent writer.
Uh-huh.
An independent writer. But his fame was from... the papers used to have big headlines in the March of Events section.
Uh-huh.
Isaac Don Levine says, you know, it's just like Jesus says.
You said some of his books were made into movies?
Yes, yes.
Was he involved with that?
Well, yes, he was in Hollywood for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, I remember they paid him $100 a day.
Mm-hmm.
He was there as an advisor on the movie that they, on the movies that they made from his book,
mm-hmm.
or his books.
Mm-hmm.
They Mind of an Assassin, I know, was in Billy Mitchell, was a movie too. But he has to go back.
Did you say Citizen Kane? No.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Pardon me?
I thought you said Citizen Kane. I'm sorry, no.
Citizen Kane, no.
No.
That's entirely different subject. That's the life of William Randolph Hearst. I know that. Because I was involved there.
I would think you would know.
I worked
know.
For Hearst Papers, yeah. In the business hand, not in the writing hand.
Did
As a matter of fact, the only reason, my whole life was due to my brother Isaac taken me out of the Jewish Morning Journal,
mm-hmm.
in the advertising department, and given me a job on the New York American. Once I got a job in New York American, from there, and that was going back to 1924, I believe, I started going up and up as much as a person, salary person, yet I had. They put me in business, yeah.
Did you ever meet Mr. Hearst?
No, I don't think anybody has met Mr. Hearst.
No?
There was Arthur Brisbane, who was the general circulation manager of all the Hearst Papers and Magazine, was Annenberg.
Mm-hmm.
It's either this man's uncle or father, I don't know, Walter Annenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Annenberg, his home is open to any president of the United States.
Right.
I think he was an ambassador to England or something.
Did you know Mr. Annenberg?
Well, Annenberg must have heard of me because I went up to his office and I got it all here. And I went up to his office and I waited in the waiting room and my hand was sweating. I thought I was going to get fired. But he sent me to Pittsfield, Mass.
Right, that's the story you had told us. I didn't know if you had met him any other time.
Yeah. No, that's the only time.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are not easily come by.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pittsfield, Mass, and I went to the Herald Tribune, and I went from one paper to another, and every paper I worked for closed up because of the radio and television and not so much the competition for the advertising dollar. The newspaper business is something that take me about 2 hours to tell you. There wasn't a city that didn't have 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 newspapers. Pittsburgh had about 7 or 8, and Boston had about 9.
What happened to them?
They went out one by one. I worked for the Graphic, I worked for the Mirror, their other business. I worked for the Tribune, the biggest paper in the United States. They're still publishing a European edition in Paris. They were New York. I could name you 20 papers, and they're all out of business because what happened? It's because the one paper is all that city can sustain. Pittsburgh has only one paper, a morning and an evening.
Right.
Printed by the Pittsburgh Press.
Right.
Pittsburgh Press, people control the morning paper. The editorial section is the only thing that's different. But that's a different subject entirely. Well, that's as far as he goes, you see. Okay. And he was 89 when he died. And it was in 1981, I believe. And is it that long? I went to his funeral with my wife, so it must have been in 1980.
Mm-hmm. A lot of important people there?
Hmm?
At his funeral, were there a lot of them?
There was no funeral.
No.
I drove 500 miles from Miami to
Washington?
North, in Florida, really up north. And very famous place near. Anyhow, I got to look at him. And when I came there, and I stayed overnight with my wife, and my wife was already dying of cancer at that time. That year she died too. And there was no funeral. His wife decided to cremate him.
Mm-hmm.
But there was
a service?
There was no service or anything, but the National Press in Washington, that was the services. I made speeches about it. Yeah.
The National Press had people?
Yeah, they had a month later. So.
They printed a book called The Days of Remembrance, a little pamphlet. And they have people that knew him. Colin Sargent, Alan Brownfield.
There's a letter from here with more than one.
There's letters from him, and there's letters from Richard Nixon that we had looked at earlier. There's so many people that must have been.
Well, you see, they.
I think this this pamphlet, Day of Remembrance, by the National Press Club, is very impressive. I don't know all the people that are.
Well, in his day, you understand that this is 1991, and his heyday was in the 1917 to 1930 or something, to 1924, especially was the height of the whole thing. It was a different period in the history of the United States and the world, because you're talking even to me, and I don't know where all these years went, you know. And that's as far as he goes, but that was in response to the letter that you read that I wrote about him, you see. And so there's something here that I want to show you.
So I'm just writing down the name of this pamphlet, so if anyone is interested, they can find it in my notes.
Do you have an extra copy of the pamphlet?
No, no, that's something I don't have. You want to borrow it, I'll let you have it.
I just wrote that down in case anybody needs to research that.
Yes, I was born right here in this building.
National Press Club, Washington, D.C., Saturday, May 2nd, 1981, Day of Remembrance, honoring Isaac Don Levine.
Yes, my birth certificate, 1890.
Oh, my goodness, a Russian birth certificate.
Yeah, well, that's
how many
not
people
the original.
Have?
I have the original somewhere else. Yeah.
I read that article that your son wrote about how, about the classifieds and how you go about.
Yeah, yeah. That was funny.
How you develop those talents or techniques in business. How did that develop?
Just out of necessity.
Your business sense, as the article was illustrating, was very very, you know, interesting. I mean, people go to business school, they don't know what you know.
Some people have their lives planned. They know what they want to be, they know what they're going to take up, and they know what they're going to it got a living from.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew. I just floated around, and circumstances, coincidences, unusual meetings brought me to one. Like my wife, I picked her up on the street when I wanted to park a car, and she wanted to park.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way my whole life was. How did I get in? I worked for, for the Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph, for Hearst paper. They went out of business. I almost broke down, crying. I thought that was the end of the world. I was sick. It was 1961. And I went to Baltimore to the Hearst paper to get a job and everything else. Well, you're over, when a person is over 60, they don't hire you. And everybody says, well, you're an old man, all that. Anyhow, what happened? I told you that, I don't want to repeat it. I answered an ad, somebody advertised for a collection. No, what happened was that I took over all the accounts, the people that let me out of a job, they closed up suddenly, the Sun-Telegraph. Had hundreds of thousands of dollars standing out for newspapers from the wholesalers and the agents. I went in the main office and I says to the general manager, he says, I am familiar with all these agents, I know what they owe you, why don't you put me on a percentage basis and I'll collect the accounts. right there.
Why do you think you were so successful at collecting?
Because I had the brains to go to the office and tell them I'll take over all the accounts of a big company like a newspaper that covered all the western Pennsylvania. And for 6 months I was coining in money like...
Are you good at research? You have all the because of your background in...
I worked for Santelli, while I was visiting the agents, and they had a bill of $5,000 or $6,000. We're not talking about little paper boys. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like a man in Altoona used to get maybe $8,000 on Sunday papers.
Mm-hmm.
Or all over Erie didn't have a Sunday paper at that time. Only Pittsburgh.
So you had access to that information from your work?
I considered myself a good collector, although I wasn't in the collecting business. It was just happened to society.
When you go on a collecting job or a subpoena job, and you present yourself to these people, why are you successful? Are they scared of you? I mean,
well, can you see? Yeah.
Yeah.
They say thank you. They take the subpoena and say thank you.
But other people would avoid, or they give them excuses.
I must be different from other people.
Yes, you must be.
So, I answered an ad, a box number in the Pittsburgh Press, and I offered to work for nothing for 2 weeks. How many people would write with a pen, no resume or anything? And they call me up from New York, and they give me a job for $600 a month, which was good money those days. And they put me in an office as a manager in Mount Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
in the Federal Fair, General Acceptance Corporation.
Right.
I tell you, I'm also interested
and
in... Oh, go on.
Go ahead. And through that collection business, I got acquainted with lawyers who took over the accounts that I couldn't collect.
Yeah.
And they're still my best friends.
All right. We had some of that information on the tape.
Right.
Yes, you did.
And I did bring it up again.
And that also brought me in. There was a period there. Yeah, these lawyers sent me out.
Mm-hmm.
Send me out to do something, to pick up gasoline credit cards, for
mm-hmm.
instance. Sam Evans was the lawyer, very famous Jewish. And I went out and picked up the card, and he gave me $5.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a look who he gave me. I called up St. Louis on the telephone. I says, why send it to Sam Evans? Give it to me. I'll do a good job for you. And ever since then, up to this date, up to today, I have a letter I got signed.
You showed us that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well,
I still get money from them.
What I was going to say is I think one other thing would be of interest to our researchers is some history about the Pittsburgh newspapers. And
well, it's ingenuity, I think, is the word. I think I do have an ingenuity sense of developing something.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do something one time when I was younger in Boston by having a what they call the opera glasses?
Opera glasses.
I was sitting home in North Russell Street and I looked through the opera glasses.
Or binoculars.
Binoculars. And I saw girls holding cards with numbers on it.
Yeah, they were playing cards.
And at the top was a big number. The winner got
uh-huh.
so much. And I said to myself, I said nothing. I went down to Shapiro's bookstore, and there was a man there, and I told him about it. He says, I'm the one that puts these cards out. Do you want to be a canvasser? I said, yeah. I says, well, we'll go to Providence, 44 miles, Rhode Island. I went to Providence, I canvassed, I put out 30 cards to people. I never gave them the addresses. The hell with him. I took it and I ordered merchandise from New York, and then my money was coming in my pockets like this. I bought a piano for my mother. At that time it was Howard Davis piano.
Sure.
$400.
Right.
And I bought furniture, and somebody got married. I gave him my.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, What about the, can you tell us a little bit about the collapse of all the newspapers in Pittsburgh and why there's only one now?
Not only Pittsburgh, but all over.
Right. What happened?
New York City had 18 daily papers. I think I can name most of them now.
Well, what happened?
Famous papers.
Uh-huh.
New York Sun was one. New York, the World was one of the biggest papers. One of the graphic, the Globe, I don't remember now. I have them, uh-huh. I have it right in some place.
But can you tell me sort of what happened, why they slowly went out of business?
Newspapers exist by advertising.
Right.
The advertising dollar has to be split. It can't be, if there is 8 newspapers in the city,
mm-hmm.
the advertiser can't afford to advertise in 8 different papers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the radio came along
mm-hmm.
and gave news and went out for the same advertisers.
I
don't know about television, but I remember on the radio. And they, and so the circulation began to drop.
Mm-hmm.
One advertiser came to the Sun Tully and they sent me a letter. They said, we want to know how much circulation we have in Shelly, PA, and in Leechburg, PA, and in Vandegrift. And in all those towns, there were local papers.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh papers didn't have much of a chance except on Sunday. Well, anyhow, it's a...